The Lord be with you.
And with your spirit.
A reading from the Holy Gospel according to Luke. Jesus said to his disciples, "A rich man had a steward who was reported to him for squandering his property. He summoned him and said, 'What is this I hear about you? Prepare a full account of your stewardship, because you can no longer be my steward.' The steward said to himself, 'What shall I do now that my master is taking the position of steward away from me? I am not strong enough to dig, and I am ashamed to beg. I know what I shall do, that when I am removed from the stewardship, they may welcome me into their homes.' He called in his master's debtors, one by one. To the first he said, 'How much do you owe my master?' He replied, 100 measures of olive oil. He said to him, 'Here is your promissory note. Sit down and quickly write one for 50. And to another, the steward said, "And you, how much do you owe?" He replied, 100 cores of wheat. The steward said to him, "Here is your promissory note. Write one for 80. And the master commended that dishonest steward for acting prudently. For the children of this world are more prudent in dealing with their own generation than are the children of light. I tell you, make friends for yourselves with dishonest wealth, so that when it fails, you will be welcomed into eternal dwellings. The person who is trustworthy in very small matters is also trustworthy in great ones. And the person who is dishonest in very small matters is also dishonest in great ones. If, therefore, you are not trustworthy with dishonest wealth, who will trust you with true wealth? If you are not trustworthy with what belongs to another, who will give you what is yours? No servant can serve two masters. He will either hate one and love the other, or be devoted to one and despise the other. You cannot serve both God and mammon." The Gospel of the Lord. I've always had a lot of trouble with this gospel, just to be honest, and I still have certain parts of it that I'm still trying to figure out, because on the surface it looks like Jesus is glorifying a cheater, right? It never made sense to me that the one who is cheated is pleased with the guy who is cheating him out of what is his. And so we have this parable of the dishonest steward. I'd like to look at the characters in this parable, though, because oftentimes when we've got somebody who is a master or who is an owner, that often represents the father. But in this case, I'm not so sure, because he is first identified as a rich man. And I'm not sure Jesus would have spoken about his father in that way. It might not be the father, as it usually is in these parables. Perhaps, too, he is a dishonest master. He got his wealth somehow, didn't he? And in a culture with so much poverty, the contrast of Jesus in this story is probably intentional by identifying him as rich. In other places, remember in the gospel how Jesus says how difficult it is for a rich man to get into the kingdom of heaven. I also think that if he were generous in giving to the poor, that's the rich man who could use his money in the right way, if he were generous in giving to the poor, Jesus would have mentioned that virtue in the gospel, but he does not. It would make the cheating of the dishonest steward even more reprehensible. The steward, then, is someone who is in charge of someone else's money. I think that in the United States, we have this sort of fixation on ownership, but in most of the world, it's not ownership. It's just the use of land and property and things that people enjoy There's not this idea of it being mine. If you think about pretty much all the indigenous cultures in the world, before economics was invented, there was no such idea. We were given the use of land for the benefit of all and for the benefit of the land. So we're given stewardship of these things over time. So I decided, and I don't know why I never did this before. I'm 61 years old, right? I've never thought to look in the footnote of the New American Bible to see what this gospel is about. Have any of you checked the footnote on this? I've been in the dark all these years, and all of a sudden, this whole thing makes sense. It says that the man was a usurer. The man was taking what was owed to his master and adding money to it, which he kept for himself. Doesn't it suddenly make sense? He kept the money for himself so that when he was caught, and it says in here in the very beginning, it says he was reported to him for squandering his property. When he was caught cheating, he simply said to the guy who he was charging a 50 extra, measures of olive oil. The guy owes him 100, but he only really owed him 50 because the steward was charging 100 so that he could keep the 50 himself, right? And he does the same thing with the measures of wheat. And then suddenly at the end it says, the master commended that dishonest steward for acting prudently. It doesn't mean that he said it was okay that he had been cheating him, but the guy who was cheating all those people changed it so that he wasn't cheating them anymore. And in this way, he won the favor of the people he was cheating, and he was reconciled with his master who he was cheating. He was cheating everybody. He made these favors to these people so that he might be welcomed into their homes when he loses his job. It's a fascinating parable all of a sudden to me because it talks about, first of all, if you pair it with the first reading today, the way in which the world has treated poor people just get poorer and poorer and rich people just get richer. And we see it happening in the world today. It's not something that stopped. It's getting worse all the time. The level of poverty in so many nations is so far below where it was even 20 years ago. It's shocking. And why people aren't talking about it, I don't know, or trying to figure out ways. I mean, it's not like I had a professor in the seminary who used to say, you can't think of wealth as a sausage, and you just cut it up and give everybody a piece, because as soon as you give all the pieces away, there's nothing left, right? But the power or the influence that comes with wealth has the ability of bringing about change. And I think that's what this gospel is about. It's reconciling, it's changing, it's reforming, in a certain sense, the system. I wanted to mention, too, because it was the footnote that I discovered, where I discovered this. It's not like I had this beautiful insight into the scriptures. But the New American Bible, which we use in all the scriptures, is, I think, a very good resource. If you don't know about it, it is the official, if you want to put quotes around the word, official Bible of the Catholic Church, especially in the United States. But it was out of Vatican II in the 19-teens, maybe 1916. There was a movement that began in the Catholic Church, which was completed in Vatican II, to try to translate the scriptures in a way that was what they called dynamic equivalence. It was as literal as they thought was possible without sacrificing the intention that the writer had for the listener to receive. So it's all about reception of the text. If the scriptures we read today provide us with the kind of reception that the writer intended, then we have what we call a good translation. So the New American Bible is different from many other Bibles you'll find out there today, because each one had a particular intention when it was translated. Sometimes literally from the Latin. Sometimes, like, for example, the Jerusalem Bible, which was translated to be very poetic. The language is beautiful. In fact, I'm not sure if it is still, but for a long time after I was ordained, maybe still, The Jerusalem Bible is allowed at weddings because the language is just prettier than what we have in the regular Bible. But as we turn to Scripture and we reflect on the words, it's good to know what's actually going on, and those translations sometimes change the sense. I have a friend who's a Jewish rabbi, and she says that we Catholics, we have no idea what Scriptures are really about. I kind of bristled at that. She said, but it's because you don't know the Hebrew. And every time you translate from one language to another, it's possible that something might be lost. Anyway, you and I are all stewards of wealth that God has given to us. We call that time, we call that talent, and we call that treasure. And we are all responsible to decide what we're going to do with that wealth that God has given to us and how we're going to use it for the good of others, to bring about reconciliation among people and to promote people in ways that can help them to live better lives. I challenge you on this ministry fair weekend, parish life weekend, to stop after Mass today outside where we've got these good volunteers who are willing to give up their weekend to talk to you about how you might get involved in different ministries in the parish. We had our big chicken dinner. We're not going to announce that anymore. It's done. We had the big chicken dinner this afternoon. Everybody who came said, this is just amazing because finally we get to be a community again. And the only reason that that happened was the work of countless volunteers who came together, cooked it, set it up, served it, and celebrated it so that those of us who came and ate had a really good afternoon. And we all enjoyed the afternoon together. This is how community happens. And this is the weekend that we'd like you to make a commitment for the coming year.